Hi there and welcome to the Sports Fan TV Cricket Fan Show, a review of the fourth Ashes Test between Australia and England out there in Sydney. Myself, Steve, Mac likes to call me the cricket guy. I'm sure other cricket guys are available, but I anchor the Sports Fans TV Cricket Show. And I'm delighted to be joined once again this week by a very good friend, Tony. Tony the legend, how are you, Tony?
I'm as well as can be expected. In fact, better than could be expected.
Well, it's great to have you, mate. It's good to have
all our guys out there and girls.
Excellent. So, let's talk about the fourth test between Australia and England. A bit of an outlier in this Ashes series so far, in as much as it didn't end in a thumping victory for Australia. There was plenty for England to take out of this test for once. And it was actually, for the first time in the series, it seemed to be a contest between two sides that were, you know, anything like the same level, anything like a comparable standard of cricket. So that was good. What was your view on that, Tony? What do you think?
Well, I preface my remarks by saying, okay, we had some luck. Let's admit it. The Aussies dropped six catches, bungled a run out, and got a wicket off a no ball. But I thought there was a definite change in attitude. As I had hinted at before I went off, I felt that where the wicket was normal for both sides, we had come to terms much better with their pace attack. And this, I think, proved to be so in this test, in fact, that their pace attack lay. But they had little spells where they put us under pressure, which is only natural in such times and on. I noticed all the wickets so far have had far more grass on them than they usually have. But I think I actually listed six big pluses to come out of the match generally from our point of view. And I thought a draw will undoubtedly boost morale. Mm-hmm. And I think, okay, they lost seven overs due to the rain and maybe a couple of overs at the end where they couldn't bowl their pace men. But I think on the whole, we merited a draw. We didn't have the best of the wicket. I think we stuck to our guns and I loved our resilience and certain players, Crawley and Bairstow in particular, Wood, God bless him, Broad, God bless him, bowled very well, particularly in the first innings, and Wood bowled his heart out the whole match. Something to say about Leach, but of course the downside, Stokes got the bad side injury and Butler broke his finger and Bairstow has strained a ligament in his thumb, but we'll just have to see how that works out. Yeah. But all in all, I don't want to go over the top because it's a draw, but it was a much more solid, improved performance and resilience.
Yeah, I agree, I think so. So let's break it down a bit going through the match. So first of all, Australia won the toss, which we shouldn't forget as well, and decided to have a bat, yep. Which I thought was interesting. If the it was possibly a good toss to lose in to some extent, because one that Root was probably less worried about losing than some of the others in the series, and he might have been a little bit relieved that he didn't have to make the choice.
No, he said he would probably have batted.
Yeah, I think it was a closer choice whether to bat or to bowl. I was a little surprised that Australia didn't put England in, given the probably the most helpful bowling conditions of the match, and the fact that they probably would feel that with England's batting lineup, they probably only needed to really bat once in the test. You put England under a lot of pressure on day one again and the heads will go down. But, Australia chose to have a bat. And obviously, to some extent, it worked for them. 416 for eight, 134 overs. So again, a lot of miles in England bowlers' legs. I think Anderson might have bowled 30 overs or something like that. They certainly bowled a lot. And of course, you had Usman Khawaja, who's brought into to the team in place of the COVID isolating Travis Head. And absolutely the star of the show in the first innings. 134, I think he got. Really, really strong performance. And, definitely.
A lovely innings.
Yeah. Yeah, great innings. So I had a look at it, because you see a player play like that and you think, well, how comes how good must Head be then if Khawaja's not in the side? And since the last Ashes series, so after that and prior to this Ashes series, in that period of 3 years or whatever in between there, Khawaja, what, has had 28 test innings, averaging just under 32, 31.8, 450s and 200s in that time. So, you know, arguably a little bit lean, but not bad. I mean, you know, that's it's not a dreadful return.
He's 32 now. And which in a way was an advantage for him, because one of the big pluses, I thought, for his innings, he came in at a time where it was by no means certain that the Aussies were going to get a half decent score. That innings was so, so important in the whole context of the match. Had he not made it, had he made 20, the whole context of the match could have changed.
Yeah, absolutely. It could have done. It was a very important knock at the time, and he really did move it from being what might have been England's first part of the game to one very definitely with batting with Smith, of course, where Australia really were in the upper hand and going in, knowing that England struggles to score anything like 400 when they bat, and so it proved. England almost got to 300, 294 all out. Bairstow obviously the main man in that innings, but I also thought I thought at the start of the innings, Crawley looked quite good, actually. I thought he looked reasonable, and then he got out. Stokes batted very well, so Bairstow was excellent. And then Wood came in and played that kind of, you know, fast bowler batting cameo that often stings a test team.
Got away with everything.
Yeah. And of course, so England finished up, though, well, 120-odd behind, but it wasn't an outclassing behind like it has been after the first part of most of the tests so far. So England could have been fairly happy with that. And I say Bairstow, fair play to him, was excellent in that. Australia then batted again.
Chanceless innings.
Yeah, it was a chanceless innings. It was very good. Then Australia batted again, 265 for six. England kept chipping away through that innings. Khawaja again scored a good 100. Cameron Green also batted very well and showed what he can do. He's been a bit bits and pieces in this series, I think, but you can certainly see what they see.
Well, again, you see, just to interrupt you, I think the Aussies, when he came to the wicket, they were, what were they, 80-something for four?
Yeah, let's have a look.
When he came in to bat in the second innings.
86
for four. Now, supposing that partnership was crucial, that we could have, I think, quite easily have bowled them out for 160, 170 at, at that particular time. And we would have been not in with a shout for a draw, but we would have had the impetus with us. And it's not beyond the bounds of possibility that we could have gone on to got very near to winning it. Mm-hmm. So again, a vital, vital innings. And he scored it, what, off 134 balls, I think.
Let's see. He got
and Green
138. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Green
138 balls. Yeah.
Yeah, 138 balls, yeah. So actually I think Khawaja came in at 68 for three, and it was Green that came in at 86 for four.
So
but between them, but they were parted on 265 for five, obviously.
The shots they both played were majestic.
Yeah. But that was only in 40 overs they put those runs on, which was pretty fun, pretty good going, really.
Yeah.
And then of course poor old Alex Carey came in and had a bat, and we'll come back to him, I think, when we think about the fifth test. But Cummins with a bit of classic captaincy. Yeah. You go in. All right, you're out first ball. I'm going to declare then, because I don't.
Yes, got him. Declared the ball after he got for a duck.
Yeah.
Shades of Alistair Cook declaring when Hick was on 98.
Yeah. Um, and um, And of course, Leach was on a hat-trick as well. And he declared and denied Leach the opportunity to bowl for his hat-trick. So anyway, it was a good...
That's correct, which I thought was a master stroke.
Yes. So I suppose the question with the Australian second innings was, should Cummings have declared earlier, actually? I mean, you know, I have a view. I don't know what your view on that is, Tony.
My view is it's very rare in tests that the captain of the side that's on top gives even a squeak to the other side. And I think that, okay, they wasted two or three overs maybe, but I think the object is, if you're 3-0 up and you've won the Ashes, and knowing England's batting record, surely a day and a bit was enough to bowl England out in the fourth innings. And I would have done exactly what Cummings did.
Yeah, I agree, Tony. I think as well, England had to bat for 11 overs that evening. Well, recent history suggests England would be about 3 wickets down by then. So, you know, I mean, that would have been... probably in Cummings' mind, that was enough time for them to have got well into England's middle order. As it was, you know, Crawley and Hamid batted out and did very well. But I don't think you can really criticise Cummings. As you say as well, in the modern game, there's very few sporting declarations anymore where you give the batting side something to chase and you make it a bit more exciting. You always make sure the game's safe.
When you've got your foot on their throat, keep it there.
Yeah, exactly. So then England into the final day, they ended up 270 for 9. Anderson and Broad seeing out the last few balls and making sure that there was no Australian victory. I think the centrepiece, or certainly at the start of the innings, was Crawley. He looked absolutely class, batting for 77 in 100 balls. He was brilliant. And watching that was superb. And it was a real shame he got out. He got an absolute beauty from Green. Really, it was going to take something special to get him out. What I noticed about his innings was he did something very simple, but that England batters have struggled to do in this series, is he made the Australian bowlers bowl at him. He didn't play anything wide of off stump. He let it go. If he could let it go, he let it go. So it meant that their lengths and their lines had to be, they wanted him to play, they had to change their lines and lengths to him. And even Stark and Cummings were struggling to bowl to him.
At the beginning of the series, I said I did feel that the Aussie conditions were highly suitable for Crawley. He's tall. He can hit the ball on the up. When he pulls and hooks, he hooks from height downwards. He doesn't hook from underneath upwards. So the chances of him getting caught out on the boundary when he's playing those gorgeous pull shots, and of course he's a lovely off driver of the ball as well. And I thought the whole innings, I mean, he went into it, it doesn't seem credible. He went into it, what, with an average of 15 or something. played, I thought it was a lovely innings. And let us hope now that he's got that positivity and confidence in him and he can go on in Hobart. I mean, as Boycott has always said, when you're an opener, you have to realise that there are going to be many times when you get the Jaffa, the unplayable ball. But as you say, what I also noticed too, how well he left the ball outside the off stump particularly, which we both have been crying out. What the Aussies demonstrated when they are batting was their ability to leave the ball not just on width, but also on height. If it was going to bounce over the wicket. Crawley played that. It was a lovely innings and he played some beautiful shots.
He did, yeah. And as I say, it was noticeable that he had a plan. He was batting with a plan. Bowl at me. And if you get it wrong, I will pull or drive you through the onside. And if you get it right, I will play it back down the pitch to you. And if you go too wide of my off stump, I'm going to let it go.
That's it.
And it was
simplicity itself, Steve. Simplicity itself. Yeah. Okay, in swinging conditions, it's slightly more difficult, but these weren't prolific swinging conditions.
No. So he looked good. I'm also going to have a little bit of a pitch here for Hamid because he didn't score many runs and it was a shame he was out in single figures again. And clearly England are going to have a decision to make about Hamid for the fifth test. But he did face 58 balls. The name of the game in the fourth innings wasn't to score runs. Now, I know Harmison particularly on commentary was talking about how Hamid had dug himself into a hole and he wasn't able to rotate the strike. He wasn't able to get off strike. He wasn't able to find ways of scoring. But he did bat for 10 overs, I mean, give or take. And I thought that was more admirable than perhaps his, you know, his total look.
I couldn't be as generous as you. In my opinion, from a very promising start where we got a couple of 20s, I think he has gone backwards. He is, in my opinion, terribly short of confidence. He's afraid to play shots. He's not even nurdling away to get the single to rotate the strike. And within those single figure scores, and yesterday, he's been dropped two or three times as well. However, having said all that, for two reasons, I think he'll play in Hobart. One, it's a be regressive step to play Burns, who's already been dropped. And I don't see the point of bringing Burns back. We may as well persevere and hope that he does what Crawley has done, come through it and gets us 50 or something like that to boost his confidence. And two, frankly, there's not really any alternative at this stage of the game than to give the guy another chance. God knows they've given Pope more chances than Hamid's had. So I would give him another. I mean, it's one chance, and give him, I think, another chance.
Yeah, I agree. We'll come on to the fifth test side in a bit. For the rest of that, for England's innings today that just finished, obviously the other thing, again, the totals weren't that important because England were never going to chase the total down. Root batted for 85 balls. Again, he'll be worried about his continually similar method of dismissal where he's nicking it off.
Yeah.
Stokes, good 60, given he was obviously in pain every time he played a shot. 123 balls, so good, fair play. And Bairstow, who scored 41 again, batted very well, 105 balls. Between the three of those, so England's number 4, 5 and 6, they faced 52.3 overs between them. So, you know, that's crucial. They did their job today. They really did.
I make a couple of points. One about Stokes. It's a bit ironic. I mean, he scored 60 over 60 in both innings. And was injured batting both times. To be, I don't mean to be cynical, but it's a little ironic that the side injury prevented him playing some of his more, what shall we say, individualistic shots, which in the circumstances in which he was batting, I don't think was any bad thing. He had to restrain some of his more impulsive shots because of the side. Mm. And I thought he played solidly. Mm. He got out to Lyon in the first innings with a ball that was an excellent ball, very underrated ball, skidded on quickly, and he was caught LBW in on the back foot. I thought he played well. Bairstow, following on from his excellent century, he would have scored more in the second innings, but he was trying to husband the bowling, and he got out okay to a poorish shot. But he had to play those type of shots because he was trying to husband the bowling.
Yeah.
And I thought that innings in itself was actually worth a lot more than what it will look like in the Bear statistics.
Yeah.
But Butler, I know he played with a broken finger and fair dues to him. But let's look at it in the round. There's no other word for me. I think he's had a disastrous tour. And maybe it's better that he goes home with his broken finger now.
I think they have announced that he's gone home. Yes. I mean, he has gone home. Also, the other thing is Leach and Broad between them faced nearly 70 balls, so they batted for almost 12 overs between them as well, which is a good effort from tail enders on a fourth innings.
One other thing I'd like to say about Leach, who is a redoubtable night watchman type, a stoic batsman. I didn't mention this in the Australian innings. At last, Joe Root set proper spinning fields for him, and he responded. And I thought he bowled much better than I've seen him bowl since way back in the first match in India. I thought, and in fact, I think he did not suffer in comparison to Nathan Lyon bowling in this match. I thought, and okay, we're going to come on to Hobart later, so I'll discuss a bit more there. But I thought, I wonder, did somebody have a word with Joe and say, look, give the guy some decent spinning fields, which he did.
Maybe. I mean, I think it was interesting in the first innings, and again, watching some of the coverage, and the commentators certainly were noting that they were effectively setting fields for Leach in the first innings to protect against the bad ball.
Yeah.
And they were giving him a deep point and things like that. And they were fairly critical of that. Root isn't, you know, I think hopefully they will have done some work on that.
Maybe we'll talk about Root's captaincy when we come to the Hobart test. See what happens.
But in terms of England's innings, the 270 for nine was great. I think Australia will feel, as you said at the outset, Tony, they dropped catches. They missed the run out. There was a wicket off a no ball. All of these things in this test will feel that they really let a fairly comfortable win slip through their fingers. More specifically, I think slip through Carey's fingers, who did not have a good test.
No, he did not.
He doesn't really seem to be offering anything with the bat. And his wicket keeping is not
great. It's Butler-esque.
not a complimentary comparison at all. So let's look at the fifth test, because I think England have got lots of questions in terms of their lineup. Some of them are form, some of them are injury, and I think there's one or two for Australia as well. So let's look at England first. So as we say, Butler's gone home, and Sam Billings, bless him, who was about to get on a plane home and have a little bit of time with his family before heading off to the West Indies for England's white ball series, was given the bat signal, went up, and he ended up in a 10-hour car journey from Brisbane to Sydney or something. Yeah. I think they're not going to do that unless they're intending
to
play him.
Surely they can't be so stupid as to not to play him after doing all that and let Pope keep wicket. Pope kept wicket adequately.
Pope was better than Butler. I mean, let's be honest. Pope did better than Butler. And also, fair play to him, he equaled the world record for the number of catches by a substitute fielder in an innings as well. So fair play.
If Billings isn't fit, I think he's right to go to Silverwood and Root and smash them round the face with the wicket-keeping gloves.
I'm sure Billings is going to play. So that's one change England will make. Yeah. Bairstow and Stokes surely are unlikely. Oh, you would have to say. Stokes plays as a batter.
I don't share your opinion. I think Stokes will want to play. Yeah. But I think he should be persuaded not to, because a side soft tissue injury could put him back 6 months.
Yeah.
I think myself, Bairstow will play.
Do you?
Yes, I do. I think the thumb, he tried out what he could do in the second innings, and he'll have 5 days improvement and treatment on it between now and then. And I think that the Bairstow will play. But of course, I'm not there. I don't know those things. But from what I've seen and how he batted in the second innings, he was a little bit discomforted at times. But I think also he's in such a rich vein of form, I think he'll want to play if he's somewhere around about 80%+ fit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe. So if those are the injury ones, then I guess England have probably, I think, got four positions in the side which are arguably form and fatigue based. So Hamid, we've spoken about. I agree with you. I don't think there's much point in recalling Burns for the fifth test.
None whatsoever.
Hamid should get that. I think if he fails again, then I think he's
we've got a nice gap, a flight home and early season.
There's the turn to the West Indies in the new year, and I would imagine he wouldn't be selected for that if he doesn't show something here. But again, for me, I think he can build on the fact that he batted for nearly 10 overs and did that opener's job in the fourth innings. That nine in 60 balls is probably worth a 40.
We have to disagree. I won't go any further.
Yeah, fair enough. But I think it was okay. So I think we both agree that Hamid plays.
Yes.
Leach is an interesting one, because again, I thought that, I mean, Leach bowled okay in this test. He wasn't out bowled by Lyon, but I think Lyon had not a great test by Lyon standards. Leach is batting. He's done another innings, as he's done a number of times now for England, where he's dug in and grafted. But I just think England should play best in the next test if they're gonna play a spinner. I'd like to see an off spinner bowl into the Australian left-handers. However, I've had a look at Hobart as a test venue. There have been 13 tests in Hobart. The last one was back in 2016, so there's not a lot of recent information to go on. Spinners across all tests, all innings in all tests at Hobart have taken 111 wickets at an average of 31.5. So it's not bad, actually. Nathan Lyon himself has bowled 112 overs there, 8 for 288. So he's averaging 36. He's got a strike rate of a wicket every 84 balls, but his economy rate is good. It's also a day-night test. So you wonder, might England
revert to the old paceman attack?
Yeah. And again, potentially run the risk of the same problem they had in Adelaide, which is if it ain't doing much, then it's a very, very, can be a very samey attack. I mean, I don't think they would leave Wood out again unless he's not fit to play. So at least it wouldn't be quite as samey. It wouldn't be quite as one paced as it was in Adelaide. But I wonder if England might be tempted again, not only not to play Leach, but not to play Bess either, and say, you know, well, if we need some spin, Root and Milan can bowl some spin.
I'll go on record where Bess is concerned. I've got more chance of playing than he has. I think he's been a bad carrier the whole tour, together with Lawrence and Overton. And unless Robinson is injured, I think the three of those will continue to carry the bags. I cannot see it. Now, I agree with you totally, but I think, as we talked about Root and setting the fields, etc., and he allowed Leach in this last test to bowl more like a spinner rather than, as you say, somebody who you see, I think this goes back, the more I think about it, the more I must applaud the Aussies' plan in the first test when they went after Leach. And I think that was a deliberate ploy to try and hit him, if not out of the series, out of being a spin bowler. And Root fell for it.
Yeah.
And Root, after that, has brought him on with not a chance of a field that's going to get any wickets until the innings here in the last test. And I think Leach was a better bowler. I didn't know the stats over the spinners. I think that they will pick Leach.
Do you? Well, Leach so far in the series, 6 wickets at 53, strike rate of a wicket every 74 balls. And for me, the disappointing thing is economy rate of over 4 and over. And that was the problem. Even watching him in this test, it was still a 4 ball and over.
But if you're setting fielders out on the boundary all the time for him, which was ludicrous.
It
gives them the freedom to play their shots, and even if they don't get boundaries, they're going to get twos or threes. I'm not an advocate of him, but I still think that he showed more promise, and I think they'll be more adventurous, and I think they'll pick him.
You think they'll pick him?
I don't like to see Milan turning his arm over, trying to bowl the occasional leggies. I don't like that. I think I could be wrong. I've been wrong before, as they say. But I think they'll pick him.
Yeah, well, we'll see. So I think the pace attack as well, which I think is quite an interesting selection choice. So I think Robinson was rested or was fatigued and wasn't played. I think Wood has to play. I think Broad surely has to play, taking 5
absolutely.
Wickets.
Absolutely, you can't not.
Which takes you then to Jimmy, and do you bring in Robinson for Jimmy Anderson? Now, I know this may well be Anderson's last Ashes test, where he's available.
I'm going to gamble here. Mm-hmm. I think that the newfound resilience in the batting must be taken another step further, shown confidence, and I would pick four pacemen and Leach.
Would you?
So it would be Robinson, and okay, if in fact that he has a side niggle, I would bring Overton in for him, and then I would pick Wood, obviously, must be, as you say, and Broad must be, and I have to say a mixture of the fact that he is so good an experienced bowler, and this is going to be his last test, I think. And what more fitting test for Jimmy than to play in the last test of the Ashes against Australia. And I think Jimmy's nailed on.
Yeah.
Particularly in the way that he played out the last over against
him. Yeah. I have to say I'm a little bit torn with Anderson in this series. So he's taken 8 wickets at 23. So you'd go, well, I'd take that. His economy rate is less than 1.8 runs an over. You'd say, well, I'd take that. But his strike rate is a wicket every 78 balls, which is a wicket less frequently than Leach in this series. And it makes me wonder if the Australians have gone, right, well, we're just going to see him off. We'll just see him out, and we'll just not worry about Anderson, because he can't bowl very long spells anymore. So
he bowled 32 overs in the last innings.
I know, but he's unlikely to bowl a 7 or 8 over spell. He's going to bowl 4 or 5 over spells, and I just wonder if the Australians again have had a plan for Anderson. So 8 wickets is okay after four tests. It's not amazing, is it? But it's, you know, 23.
He did the economy. You have to look. He bottled up one end, really, when he bowled.
Yeah.
I'd say he's nailed on. Last test, there's a bit of sentiment in there too, and I think he's nailed on.
Yeah, yeah. So I wonder as well if they might find.
I think the choice is the four pace bowlers, because I think Wokes is now out of the scene. Yeah. Although being a day-nighter, one might consider, but he's never done it really abroad.
No.
So I think the choice is going to be what you say, the four bowlers, and then I say, well, will we add five? So if we have five, what number is it? And Robinson plays. Robinson's batting at 7, right?
Yeah.
Well, Wood at 8. Leach at 9, Broad at 10, Anderson 11.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they've got to say, okay, you batters, you've shown us the signs. Sadly, Stokes is not there in our likely opinion. So let's go for it and chance the longest tail.
Yeah. Well, I'm assuming that they won't risk Stokes and Bairstow. So I think in that case, both Pope and Lawrence come in. With Billings at 7,
Lawrence is going to carry the bags. No chance.
Maybe
he would have played in this test if he was going to play.
Yeah, maybe.
And now the batsmen have scored. Okay, I take the injury thing. But my team, just to run it through, would be Hamid, Crawley, Milan, who although sadly has dropped form since his 2 good efforts, but Milan at 3, Root at 4. Bairstow at 5, Billings at 6, Robinson 7, Wood 8, Broad 9, Leach 9, Broad 10, and Jimmy at 11.
Well, it's a bold team. Mine, just for completeness, would be Hamid, Crawley, Milan, Root, and then I'm assuming the injuries, so Pope at 5, Lawrence at 6, Billings at 7, then I'd have Bess at 8. Wood at 9, Robinson 10, Broad 11.
I admire your optimism.
If England feel that there's not much point in bowling a spinner in Hobart, then maybe you would see Overton come in for Bess. But we'll see.
There's no way in the whole wide world Bess is going to play ahead of Leach. No way in the whole wide world.
And there's no way in the whole wide world that Ollie Robinson's going to march out at number 7, 5th wicket down. Not a chance. But we'll see how it plays out. But Australia as well, I've got a couple of selection marks,
indeed,
I think.
Indeed.
So I think, well, in terms of the bowling attack, I think we know that Hazelwood is not going to be fit for the final test. So I would imagine they'll keep Boland in
Yes. And that, well, you can't look at his average. Tell the fans the average. Have you got it there?
Oh, it's 8.9 or something like that. It's ridiculous.
I mean, the thoughts of dropping a bowler with that.
And, yeah.
It's just and to me, he's a journeyman bowler, but he has the ability to put the ball almost on a sixpence.
Yeah.
And that is in this series is absolutely vital.
Yeah.
I think they've got their bowling attack nailed at the moment.
Yeah,
the question, there are two questions for me. Carey and do they bring back your man?
Head. I think they do. I think for me, surely Kawaja opens with Warner. I don't think Harris has shown.
Opened before in Test?
Yeah. I think he has, and I just don't think Harris has shown very much.
Oh no,
much.
He's
I mean,
not. He struggled, and he dropped a very simple
he did.
Catch.
He did. I think that's the kind of thing, particularly the dropping of the catch, which is the thumb on the scale for the Australian selectors. It's the kind of thing they don't put up with. So I think Kawaja. I mean, how can they drop Kawaja after scoring?
Well, of course there is precedent for it. Mm. Boycott scored a double ton and he was dropped.
Yes, that's true. that was back then, and that was England.
That was
selectors.
Over about 4 days he scored that. But then, yeah.
Yeah. So I think for me, the Australian side is Kawaja comes in for Harris, or he stays in and Harris comes out the team. Kawaja opens with Labuschagne and Smith, and then you have Head back in at number five, Green at six. And then the question is Carey. He's not been great. He's averaging 15 with a bat. He's really the one outlier in the Australian side who hasn't really shown what they can do. And the question is, it's Hobart. It's the end of the series. Is this a return for Tim Payne? Is this where Payne gets selected and his home ground, probably the easiest crowd for him to play in front of if he's going to return to the team? And does Payne come back in and you know, kind of...
I would think not. And the reason that one of the reasons is that would be three captains in the pot. That would be Cummings, Smith and Payne. And I think that's too many captains spoiling the broth. That's first one.
Yeah.
Second one is there are two other contenders. There's Wade, who is an outspoken person, admittedly, but has scored a lot of runs. And then there's the guy playing in England for, is it Leicestershire, Ingles?
Yeah.
And, would they try him?
Yes, possibly.
Mm-hmm. I thought about it long and hard, and I decided the Aussies are reluctant to make changes and they'll keep Carey in for the last match.
Yeah. I think it's a toss-up. I wouldn't be surprised with almost any of those selections, frankly. Wade's probably possibly a good shout, actually, because Wade could is a good enough to bat in the top five as well, and would be an excellent player to come in at number seven. I mean, would be really, really excellent. So we'll see. So at least, you know, England have given the Australians some selection questions, at least, which is which is something. Even if, quite frankly, England's team could be picked out of a hat, and you know you don't quite know what it's going to be, and it doesn't really seem to be.
Strangely or perversely, I'm actually looking forward to this.
Yeah,
because. Do we build on what has been slightly mildly laid down as a foundation? Let us hope that we do. Two, it is a day-nighter, which is incidentally another reason why I think Jimmy will play. And it is a chance for our bowlers to have the best opportunity to, and they have shown signs of getting at the Aussie top order. I'm really be fascinated. And I'd also tell you one other thing that did strike me. I thought their fielding improved in this match too.
Yeah.
And they've obviously worked on it.
Yeah.
The only downside is that Silverwood would be back.
Well,
I'm not a Thorpe fan either, but there we go.
No, no. We'll see.
That's for another day.
For another day, indeed. Yeah. So, well, that takes us through. I'll just take time just before the end to plug my article that I wrote on Medium, which looks at the potential for the future of Red Bull cricket for England. Which
I know excellent article, Steve. Thanks,
Tony. I know there's bits of it you agree with and bits of it you probably don't. But
that's the nature of the game, isn't it? You can't write something that everybody's going to agree with. But I thought the basic trend of what you had to say was absolutely spot on.
Great, thank you. So I would welcome any readers of that. And if anyone's got any thoughts or comments on that, so please drop me a note on Medium or on Twitter, which I often am on during the test matches at @SFTV_cricket, where I, you know, try and chip into that debate as it's going on as well. Whilst I'm up in my pyjamas with my Horlicks and cocoa in the middle of the night whilst I'm watching some of the test matches. But yeah, it's been great. So please, you know, send us your comments. Let us know what you think of our potential teams. Do you think you agree with both of us? I think I was surprised that both Tony and I both think Hamid will get the fifth test. Do you think that's likely, or do you think we'll go back to Burns, or maybe do something crazy I did see somebody on Twitter say, well, we should probably get Milan to open because he's been basically doing it anyway, so we might as well just start batting number one and we'll bring in another middle order batter. But I don't know about that. But anyway, yeah, please like and subscribe to Sports Fans TV and the Cricket Fan Show. It's great to have you with us as always, and we'll be back after the fifth test to have a look back at that and have a look back across the whole series. And I think we know it's going to be a bit of a post-mortem. But Tony, anything else you want to add before we sign off?
No, I don't think so. I just, one last point about Root's captaincy. Yeah. I just would like to see him be slightly more positive. He at the moment is maybe too defensive, and he's reactive rather than proactive. He puts a man in a fielding spot after the ball has gone there. Cummings is totally different. Cummings has been putting people there in anticipation and has had series of plans and bluffs and is genuinely kept the batsman thinking with his captaincy. I want to see Joe, who has that in him. He has it in him. And I want to see him be more expressive with his captaincy in this last test.
Yeah. Well, there we go. That's something to look out for. And at the end of the series, I'm sure we can look and do an interesting compare and contrast between Cummings and Root's captaincy style. It's obviously much easier to captain a winning side with scoring 400 runs and taking cheap wickets.
It's his first attempt at captaincy. Yeah. We mustn't forget that.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. So anyway, thank you very much for that. Thanks as always for your time and your insight today, Tony. It's been great to discuss this with you.
It's
always
better.
Better to have a chat rather than just having me doing the show.
Sometimes a dissenting, even if it is stupid opinion, is well worthwhile.
Great stuff. Well, there's very few stupid opinions on the SFTV Cricket Fan Show. So thanks very much for joining us, and we'll see you next time after the fifth test. Thank you, folks.
Good night, all.